session number 10420, rule 32.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 32. I was asking about air activity, Colonel.
Yes. The German Air Force was, of course, in the ascendancy. The British Air Force was very feeble. But we ourselves were never bombed. The South Africans, I remember, were dive-bombed. And on one occasion, I think the Northumberland Hussars, in our box, did bring down a German plane. But on the south, there was a lot of dive-bombing going on. And, of course, as you know in the history, when the battle did start up, the 150th Brigade were completely annihilated. And that's where the Germans broke through, along the Trig Caputo. Well, anyhow, as I've mentioned, I was warned to take out a half column. Now, the things really were desperate in the south, although we never appreciated. And my half column was under the direct orders of the division, and the division were going to give me orders from time to time when I took it out, but I did not take it out in front. I took it out behind, and I was sent into the Cauldron and the Knightsbridge, and I went out there, and there absolutely was frightful. I had a particularly near squeak driving my column along. I was supposed, I think, to report to Brigadier O'Carroll, who was commanding an armoured brigade. I did find him, but it was too late. I think his armour was about finished. I had one extremely near squeak. My intelligence officer, who was leading the column, of course, was in front of me, and a German tank hull down put a shot between me and it, and I seized the wheel from my driver Parkinson and swung very sharply left-handed and just saved getting the second one. But I realized now that we were right in the middle of the Battle of Knightsbridge. I was supposed to be given orders from the division headquarters, which never came. As a result, when it got dark, I took my column out of what I hoped was the fray, and went myself to divisional headquarters. And there I saw the divisional commander standing up in his vehicle, General Ramsden, and all the other vehicles were loaded and their engines were running. And I'd not received an order. And I went up to him and said, "What are my orders, sir?" And he said to me that the battle has gone badly. Started well, but has gone very badly indeed. Get yourself back into your box.
About when was this? About what date would this be?
This was around about the end of May, 28th of May. You see, so we're getting very near the end now.
So you set off with your half column, and
yeah, I'd have guns, so many guns.
But you didn't know what your objectives were.
No, I was. The objective was really to to get to Brigadier O'Carroll and see if he wanted any help with my half column of guns and infantry.
Did you ever come into action while you were out?
No, not there. The column, incidentally, was called Apple Column. And not there. I went and saw the brigadier standing in his car in the moonlight, and he told me that it had gone well in the morning, but it was now finished and all over. The situation was critical. And he said, take your column back into your box. And he said, I'm moving division headquarters back into a box. And I got back, I suppose, to the gap at about 4 o'clock in the morning. And for the next 24 hours, we rested. But we did begin to realize, at least certainly I did, that things were pretty critical down in Knightsbridge and the Cauldron. Well, we rested for 24 hours, and then my column was sent out to the front in no man's land in the front. And for the first day, we camped out there. Well, not camped out there. I mean, we bivouacked out there. And for the first morning, first day, we had some fairly good hunting, you might say. Freddie Cole with his carriers, he was then carrier platoon commander, he rounded up whole field dressing station of the Italians. But we let them go. We really didn't want to be bothered bringing a field dressing station in. And anyhow, it was the Red Cross was flying. And what we did capture was a large tanker of water, which was worth its weight in gold almost, and we brought that in, naturally, the Germans reacted, and next day, we were more or less surrounded by German armored cars. And we were driven to the in front of the 8th Battalion, not the 6th. We were forced by the German armored cars to an area out in front of the 8th Battalion, with these armored cars all the way around us, very close to the outpost platoon. And the brigadier happened to be there on this occasion in the 8th Battalion area, and I was in the 8th Battalion area because I was commanding it. It was just outside, and the armored cars were on the site ridge in front. And a brigadier said to me that I was under Colonel Jackson of the 8th Battalion, who'd been our second in command for a few days. And Jackson told me to try and get those armored cars shifted. All I had was some two or three 2-pounder anti-tank guns on naked portees, i.e. they were just on just on the three-tonner chassis and a few carriers. And so I told the anti-tank gunners to just dash up, let off a shot and come back again, which all they could do. And the carriers tried to do much the same with the machine gun. And Freddie Cole, who was a gallant carrier commander and had been commanded the carriers all along and done all this gallant action, Freddie Cole, driver of his carrier, as he dashed up to the anti-tank gun, the armored cars, was killed. And it was a maddening thing to do, to order. His driver was killed, Freddie Cole was badly wounded, and to get out of the operation, Freddie Cole had to press the dead driver's knee, because the foot was on the accelerator, and he, with one hand, although wounded, got out. The brigadier saw it and said it was a very gallant action, and I had to put in Freddie Cole for a military cross, and I duly did, and he got it. But it finished him, so far as staying with the battalion. Added to that, Sergeant Hall's carrier, Sergeant Hall was another of my regulars, Teesdale regulars out of Barnacastle, he's still alive to this day. Sergeant Hall, the carrier, was returning into the 8th Battalion lines. I've got everybody back into the 8th Battalion lines, and Sergeant Hall carrier was the last carrier in, and the 8th Battalion closed their gap, and his whole carrier blew up. Fortunately, none of them were seriously wounded, but they were terribly shocked, of course. The carrier was a write-off. Jackson was very apologetic. Sammy Bettison, my CO, was furious that such a silly sort of operation should ever have been organized. And that was the end of Applecall. It was a very unpleasant end, too. In fact, it was a disastrous operation altogether, going out behind and going out in front, except for the first day on the front. I think we got this water tanker, and I think we knocked out two or three other lorries, as well as capturing the whole of the Italian advanced dressing station.
Is there any? I know you have a quite a high opinion of Cole. What was he like as a person?
Cole came from Carlisle House in Newcastle, Northeastern Electricity Board. He at first had a bit of bounce about him, but he was a splendid chap, really, very loyal. He did come back to me in the Alamein line, but couldn't make it. He wasn't fit enough. And he then went back and was posted to the School of Mountain Warfare in Lebanon. And many months later, I went there on a course to the School of Mountain Warfare, and he said, "I've squared the doctor." And I said to him, "Freddie, what have you been doing?" "Yes," he said, "I've squared the doctor, and I'll be able to jump out of an airplane." And if you read Fitzroy MacLean's book on the operations in Yugoslavia, you will find that Freddie Cole did jump out of an airplane there and was the administrative officer for Fitzroy MacLean. And I've never heard of him since. I would awfully like to meet him, but I've no idea what happened to him. And he could get on with anybody. I can remember him having a long talk with Monty. But he was very loyal and very gallant. But that really was a disaster for Apple Cole and poor old Freddie Cole.
Were there any other of your officers who you can recall with for any reason?
Oh yes, they've nearly all Ferens that we've talked about. I can go on with him. He was wounded too, getting out of the Gazala line, and he left us very shortly after. He had a splash on his back. You know what I mean? The shell had splashed on his back, and he'd got lots of little chips and bits out of his back. And he went off to the not Air Force, but some air control, which no doubt he'll tell you in Italy when he recovered.
And was he your second in command?
Who?
Was he your second in command?
No, he left before that. I never had hardly ever had a second in command. That was the end of Apple Call. And there was one thing I always remember. While this hotting up and all the battle was raging, I got a message, perhaps it's a little before the present moment, I got a message to say that any soldier that wanted his dentures repaired, would I send a return in, right in the middle of the battle. But all the time, food, rations, and mail and water had been coming up right to almost to the day we left and we came out of the line. I know the day before we did come out, which was the 14th of June, I think it was on the 13th of June, I went up with Derek Tomlinson, who became my adjutant, to the South Africans. And we listened to the wireless, on their wirelesses, and we heard the Queen's Bays say they were out of ammunition in the battle. And obviously it was finished, the battle was finished. But we never appreciated, I mean, there we were, suffered no casualties. We were still living there, ready to do whatever we were told to do. Anyhow, on the 14th of June, the CO said, called a conference, and we all were smiling and went into the officer's mess, smiling away, and he said, "Gentlemen, you will smile on the other side of your face when you hear what I've got to tell you, but we are to break out tonight." And this was the breakout, which General Frazer Gangoin in his book says is an epic which deserves a story all of its own. And of course the division, 50th Division, was the last to leave the Gazala line. Everybody else had gone. Now, what we had to do was the breakout through a bridgehead, which at 7 o'clock that night was going to be made by the 8th Battalion, right through the Italian, it was going to be a bridgehead right through the Italian lines, right through across the Trig Caputo, which was the lines of communication of the Germans and the Italians, and right out deep into the desert. The battalion would be divided into three columns. The CO would have one column, I would have another column, and Major Mike Ferens, with brigade headquarters, would have the third column. And the bridgehead was to be made, as I say, by the 8th Battalion at 7 o'clock, and we were then to pass through the gap nose to tail. Incidentally, the 9th Battalion were to follow us behind Mike Ferrans's 3rd Column. Mike Ferrans failed, never got through, and the 9th Battalion failed to get through too. And they actually scrapped their way along the coast and came out that way. Once again, a sandstorm came to our rescue during the day when we loaded up all the trucks. So the German Air Force couldn't see us loading up. I think the Bren carriers were to drive as far as they could and then were to be burnt, set alight to burn. We had to take food for 3 days and enough petrol for 300 miles. And really, the feeling in the box then, you know, was pretty grim. We were going to have this desperate operation. And it was a desperate operation. Everything was all being taken away and everything was being taken down and packed and everything not wanted was buried in case we had to come back. We formed up at dusk each column was to be led by a South African armored car, and then came one of the intelligence section with the compass, and we had a few sappers behind in case we had to lift any mines, all went well. As I say, at 7 o'clock, the 8th Battalion started their attack, and we started to move at 8. It was quite dark. There was a hell of a noise all round, of course, and there was dust and sand being blowing everywhere from the shells. Outpost platoon had been bombed, shelled. They were to come in and join us, but poor Cathcart had been killed, and I think the sergeant and two others had been wounded. I think I said 7. I think we formed up at 7. Prompt at 8, the 8th Battalion did its attack, and then we started to go through. And the gap.
How wide was the gap?
The gap was only just the width of no width at all, just to allow a column to pass through.
And it was a nose to tail.
Nose to tail.
And you were in the middle of the three columns, were you? The CO's column in front.
CO's column was in front. Then came my column. I was led by a South African armored car, and then Butler. An officer called Butler was in the next vehicle, and then I came in my vehicle. I think the enemy began to realize what was happening, and they started shelling us. A truck of the CO's column, which had Derek Tomlinson in, who was then the adjutant, and the IO, it went up on a mine, and the driver was killed, and Derek Tomlinson was completely shattered. That held up me, my column. Well, while my column was being held up, we were being shot at. And Parkinson and I got out and we lay down under the truck, and my truck was hit by a bullet. Fortunately, it just went through the body, but we were lying down underneath. Well, then, to add to the difficulty, my armored car, South African armored car, went up on a mine. It blew up on a mine. But we did manage somehow, whether the sappers got out and lifted a few mines around it, we did manage to crawl past the armored car without going up on the mine and get past. And then we got through the gap and we got across the Trig Caputo. We had to drive 30 miles on a bearing of 190 degrees. And I said to my chaps, if you stick to my tail, I'll do my very best to get you through. And somehow or other, we did get split up. I lost half of my column, but we eventually joined up. But it was a nasty experience, driving right across the Germans, Trig Caputo, LC, all churned up with all the German tanks and vehicles. And we drove straight across that. We saw Germans having little bivouacs and having steam round fires. So we drove on for 30 miles out into the desert. And I then went on for another 5 miles to make absolutely sure we were really well clear. But by now, all sorts of other vehicles of other columns are tacking on to me. And on one occasion in the dark, a German, great big German three-tonner lorry came thundering down, and we were just going to put a shot into it in the dark. And then we heard a whole lot of Geordie voices inside, and they were the 8th Battalion had captured it and were making use of it in their escape too. Because they had to follow, when the last had gone through, they had to follow on behind.
What was the visibility like?
Because black, pitch black.
A column of vehicles in front churning things up for you.
Pitch black. You had to stick nose to tail, you see.